say about the state of the U.S. economy. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Frank Emsbach joins us, emeritus professor, University of Wisconsin in Madison. Also joining us, Clavin Zeez, political economy researcher and analyst who joins us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Frank Emsbach, let me first start with you. So SVB failing. What are we looking at here? Losses of $1.8 billion in a bond fire sale in which it led to clients to withdraw deposits. What does a $1.8 billion bond fire sale mean? And also looking at how it's not a small bank, 16th largest bank in the country, which held $210 billion in assets.
Well, the bond sale is that the bank was short on cash and so went to the bond market to cash in its bonds to get cash. But everybody said, wait a minute, why are they short on cash? And began looking a little further into the bank's finances. But the issue is not the $1.8 billion. The centrality of this bank is that it is the banker for approximately, according to the New York Times today, 2,500 or so startup companies. And so these companies are high-tech companies of all kinds, many of them in California. And so a company, let's say, is starting up and they're beginning to grow their business and they're crucial to this little, you know, market that they've got. And they put in, they have $4 million deposit in this bank. And this happens. Well, what does that mean? It means the first $250,000 of their money is okay. But the other $3.5 million or $3.75 million is not okay. They can't get to it. So they might not be able to make payroll. They might not be able to pay off other, you know, suppliers. And so what happens here is there is a multiplying effect in a very, very crucial portion of the American economy, which is the high-tech startup portion of the American economy. And that's the importance of this bank.
Sure. Well, having a tough time here understanding, but it's almost something that maybe is somewhat customary looking back at the 2008 financial crisis, Clive Menzies, and that's how a bank, the second biggest one here, can collapse. When the news came out just on Wednesday, they asked for $2.25 billion to shore up their balance sheet, and then there's a run, and here we are. How does that happen?
Well,
Frank, it's for Clive Menzies. I'm sorry. I'll get to you, Frank. Go ahead, Clive.
Yeah, I think Frank is quite right. You know, this is just a very small trigger or spark for something much bigger. I mean, essentially, we never escaped the 2008 financial crisis because the way to escape that was that people should have lost a lot of money, but they didn't, and the banking system was propped up. And money is effectively, in this banking system, is our single point of failure. And a failure of the banking system, which dwarfs the real economy, causes real disruption in the real economy. And money is the medium through which the plunder and control has been exercised. So in 2008, the bank bailouts and the TARP relief and the quantitative easing that has happened ever since have been just the issuance of debt to prop up what is effectively a bankrupt banking system. And by September 2008, the Fed started to expand its balance sheet because, again, there was a liquidity crisis in the money markets, and this is what we're talking about today. And the reason there is a liquidity crisis is that the way this money expansion has occurred is through central banks buying back much of the toxic debt which accumulated prior to the 2008 crash, and they have been buying debt instruments ever since. So the whole house of cards is built on very little value. The central banks have been buying at market value, but the market value in no way reflects the real value of the underlying assets. So what we're talking about with this, if you like, domino falling, is the beginning of something much bigger. I mean, the big banks like Deutsche Bank have been bankrupt, but what's shown on their balance sheet has a value that bears no relationship to reality.
But they don't close down. Again, goes back to the question. Let me get to Frank Imspach with the same question. Frank, the second biggest bank in the U.S. going down the way it did, I mean, you would think that the 2008 financial crisis would have been obviously a learning lesson. I mean, where's the SEC? Where's the control? It's not a small bank here.
It's not a small bank. And where the controls are basically the ideology of control is not to control capitalism, but to support it. And so when there is a banking crisis or liquidity crisis caused by other reasons, in this case, an attempt to curb inflation by raising interest rates and increasing unemployment, that's the chosen method. So that creates all kinds of other problems, one of which is that now people can't get cheap money for investment. And so there are questions about the kind of investments now that are being, in this case, 2,500 of them, in the high-tech industry. So the importance of this bank isn't alone that money sort of seems to like disappear. The importance is that a major, innovative, growing sector of the American economy just got hit in the head because these companies, these smaller companies, do not have resources. They can't suddenly go someplace else if their money is tied up in litigation and get other cash so soon.
Right.
So what you've done here is destabilized a very, very important section of the economy. And we don't know. This is Saturday. So we don't know what's going to happen Monday in terms of many of these firms or other banks.
I think we need some backdrop here, Clive Menzies, when it comes to the point that Frank is making there, because SVB served as one of the primary regional banks when it came to the tech sector. And, of course, startups, for example, as Frank indicated there. But we do know is what has happened from the latter half of the year 2022, roughly around September, when you saw mass layoffs. And, again, you can give us that backdrop when it came to tech firms like Meta, Amazon, Google, and the likes. What happened? Because we know those layoffs were huge in numbers. And even now, in the first quarter of 2023, we've seen around 50,000 additional employees to have been laid off?
Well, Kaveh, there are multiple strands to this. And I think just before I address the tech issue specifically, the tech companies that Frank was describing are what are classified as small to medium-sized enterprises. Now, I mentioned in my last contribution just now that the Fed started expanding its balance sheet in September 2019. And that date is quite important because the COVID psychological operation, as I would call it, was actually instrumental in closing down huge swathes of the small to medium enterprise economy. So not only is the tech sector being affected by this specific banking crisis, but there has been a general assault on any small businesses. And these large companies, the ones that are laying off masses of people, Meta, Microsoft, etc., there are multiple factors at play there because they are losing the ground to some extent to distributed autonomous organization, which I might go into later if we have time, which is basically a much more distributed way of working. And they recognize that, and with AI and all the rest of it, they just don't need the people. And this economy is built on the premise of we price labor in terms of supply and demand, but we have an oversupply of labor and a lack of demand, because basically the more labor you can shed, the more money you make. And that's the sort of cold, hard reality of how these companies work. And it's for shareholder value. So that there are many strands, but in essence, Frank is right, that it's a domino effect, that these small companies can't pay their wages. They have suppliers, and it goes on down the chain. And this is against a backdrop of overinflation inflated money supply, which is going to lead to hyperinflation. So you have all these forces, some of which are opposing, some of which are congruent, and it's going to create a great deal of instability. But luckily, there are, if you like, other things emerging that are going to hopefully act as a safety net when everything, for want of a better way of putting it, and excuse my terminology, goes to shit.
Okay. All right. Couldn't be clearer than that. All right. So, Frank Imspach, correct me if I'm wrong. If you're having the types of layoffs, in terms of numbers, I should say, that's happened now up to this point, roughly speaking, it's about 125,000 in a span of about 5 or 6 months, particularly skewed in the tech sector. Isn't that going to affect the U.S. economy? Because that's what I'd like to get into with you and from this half of the program, as to what's going on with the U.S. economy. I mean, roughly 125. Some say it's up to 200,000. Some, I think CNBC was one that reported that it could be up to 200,000. But, I mean, when you have that many layoffs, doesn't that affect the U.S. economy and the supply chains and the consumers who are now out of the economic cycle, perhaps, that are going to be spending the money?
Well, not quite. It might, but here are a couple of different things. First of all, 200,000 people out of the tech sector is not a huge amount, given all the people in the tech sector. That's the first thing. Second thing is, we're not talking about an immediate cutoff of income. Many of these people have various packages for unemployment and separation from their company that last a couple of months. But the importance of this bank failure, that's another issue, because a lot of the people in some of these companies went over or are going over to the increase in employment in the smaller and medium-sized companies, which was fueled by the cheap money. So in a place like the Silicon Valley, where there's hundreds of these companies, as well as the larger ones, there was a safety valve. And that safety valve now may be closed, because these companies are in trouble. So that's one thing. Another, but there are countervailing forces. If we take this area, Madison, Wisconsin, which is a very, very highly concentrated medical high-tech community, Epic just announced that they were going to hire 1,800 more people on top of the 7,000 they've got here in the suburbs of Madison. So, you know, there are still different factors, different sectors of the economy that are growing. And, of course, we now have what's going to be another infusion in the tried way in which the United States has dealt with unemployment and whatnot, the Keynesian method of defense spending. There's a 4-point-some-odd% increase in the defense spending. There are increasing demands and cries to the defense industry to hire people to supply the war in Ukraine. And so there's going to be a big push in that direction. So I think there are some countervailing forces. Now, we'll see if there are enough. But the fact of the matter is that the area that's going to be most affected is going to be this high-tech sector. But 250,000 people, although it sounds like a lot, and it's certainly not good news, is not the kind of thing that will destabilize the economy. What's going to destabilize the economy is if a couple of these other banks that are related in the same economic sector as this bank, if okay. they begin to falter on Monday, then we're in a different situation.
Well, Clive Menzies, when you take a look at the way that COVID came and the money that the U.S. spent, it is said it's about $1.5 trillion, okay? Given the money that was spent and the return that the U.S. is getting, when you take a look at the U.S. GDP, it's not getting that much of a return back. isn't that indicative of a U.S. economy that's not on steady foot?
I think that presupposes that American policy had anything to do with bank bailouts and COVID and all the rest of it. That was all driven by the people who were the beneficiaries of all this debt's being created. I mean, the banking system is driving everything, the people who control money. So, no, they didn't get much of a return. But, you know, nor did anyone else. This has been an assault globally. And what we're talking about, as I've discussed before on your programs, is a structural issue. We have some fundamental flaws in our structure, and there is no way out of this other than to change the structure as to how we organize ourselves. And what underpins that structure is money, which I described as a single point of failure. And what is emerging to take its place is a very different way of handling value, which is already being capitalized on by Amazon, Google, because they're using our data and they are making huge amounts of money out of it. Well, what is going to shift is that instead of having that data value harnessed and harvested by relatively few small companies, which cumulatively Apple, Amazon, and I think Google are worth something like $15 trillion, that is going to dissipate into something called distributed autonomous organization. Open source created the internet, and it is creating the same environment for money or value. It's yet to be applied to money, but it will be. Money methodology will change, and that is the way the transition will occur. But the existing framework of continually creating more and more debt in order to keep this bicycle upright, sooner or later fails. That's why we have debt jubilees and bank failures every few decades. And arguably, we should have had the mother of all bank failures in 2008. What they're desperately trying to do with the Great Reset and all the other measures they're trying to do is come up with a digital replacement that will try and, if you like, anesthetize the economy from all this debt. But it ain't going to work. And so this distributed autonomous organization is what will emerge to take its place.
Okay.
But I can give you a time horizon on that.
All right. We also need to touch a little bit about what you talked about, that open chat, which is a phenomenon in itself. All right. So, Frank, you talk about how we have to wait until Monday to see how other banks are doing. Isn't that a worrying sign that we have to wait? I mean, really, which camp are you in? Because there's two different takes about this collapse that has happened. One saying that contagion is going to happen. Other banks are sure to either go bankrupt or stop operations, however way you want to term it. And there are others that say, no, banks actually are in a good financial standing, and that's not going to happen. So where does it stand?
Well, I think it partially depends on the bank and their business. And I don't have, you know, in my head, a encyclopedic knowledge of all these major banks. All right. I think that it stands. Yes, it's worrisome. The fact that you were sitting around on Saturday and you've got 2,500 small businesses who've desperately tried to move their money from the Silicon Valley Bank to other banks so they can operate on Monday morning. You know, they're the ones who are worried. And of course, observing this and reading, you know, the tales of woe in the paper about this and that company who's had a quarter of, you know, millions of dollars, now they can't get it. Of course it's worrying. And yes, it's disturbing that you should have the most powerful economic system in the world waiting for 24 hours to see if there's going to be a collapse. Obviously there's a problem. The fundamental problems, though, are that a whole train. The Federal Reserve says, well, we're going to solve inflation by attacking working people, by increasing employment and raising interest. Well, what do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen is that money available to startups is going to become more expensive, and they're going to be looking around for other ways to deal with it. And so you begin to undermine that industry, and that's what's happened here. They began to go to the SVG and say, we need more cash. SVG is looking around and saying, well, all right, gee, we're a little short, sell the bonds, and oh my God, why are you short on cash? What's going on over there? And so you have these contradictory effects. Yes, we put in a tremendous amount of money. The American government put in $1.some-odd trillion. To what? To a social safety net, fundamentally, that had been underfunded for a quarter of a century. Okay, and so what we did is we reached the minimum standard that most people in the developed world had for 18 months, incidentally. It's all gone away now. So we're not talking about an investment in productive efforts in this COVID business. You know, we're talking about making good on a quarter of a century of unpaid debt, in a certain sense, to people. Now, just now, in the last year or so, Biden and his advisors, and geez, we gotta do something. We're losing the productivity battle, not, you know, something major. So these things are all happening at once.
Sure.
And I think are mutually contradictory and hence very, very difficult of solution.
There's so many points you raised there. My mind just stopped, I think, halfway through what you said. So I apologize for that. Let's try to make some sense out of what was said there, Clive Menzies. And one phrase that stood out of what Frank said was how the Fed is attacking the people. And then, of course, he went on with a further explanation of that. What is going on with the Fed when it comes to interest rates, when it comes to a job report that indicates there's lots of jobs that have been filled, but that's not what the Fed really wants? It wants to cool down the inflation, and the rosy job output there is not good news for the U.S. economy. Perhaps that needs a bit of explanation, if you can, Clive Menzies.
Briefly, because there's a much bigger explanation, but in essence, as I've said on this program before, money rules, and the banking system comprises central banks and commercial banks, and they create all the money, they create all the debt, and they run the financial system. And in running the financial system, they run all the other levers of power. Governments do not rule. The money system has access to all the levers of power, including government, but or commerce. And as I say, it's a much bigger conversation. As far as the other piece of Frank's conversation, where he was talking about what was going to happen on Monday, and he said it depends on the state of the balance sheet and the business type of the other banks. In essence, banking is a confidence trick. Basically, you sign a piece of paper for a loan, and they give you money in return. And as long as everybody has confidence in that bank, then that money is regarded as being worthwhile. And so the confidence trick is the business model. And thus, if you lose confidence, then the trick fails and we have a banking collapse. And this is the SVB situation. I cannot predict whether on Monday the dominoes are going to continue falling, because I've been staggered at, given that we saw this coming in 2015, I've been staggered at how long they've managed to perpetuate this tightrope walk, if you like, and they've not yet fallen off.
So you're saying there'll be other banks that may default based on your reading?
Well, I don't know. I'm not making a prediction, but I know for a fact that most of the major banks are bankrupt because their balance sheets comprise assets which have been marked to value because of the Fed and other central banks have been buying them at market price.
Sure. All right. Guess what, guys? Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. We do apologize. I wish we could continue this. Frank Amsbach, thank you for your contribution. Emeritus Professor at the University of Wisconsin. Clive Menzies, political economy researcher and analyst from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tapway and the team, it's goodbye.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of Chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode. Now let's listen to 184th up to 186th verses of Chapter Shu'ara.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَاتَّقُوا الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ وَالْجِبِلَّةَ الْأَوَّلِينَ
And fear he who created you and the former creation.
قَالُوا إِنَّمَا أَنْتَ مِنَ الْمُسَحَّرِينَ
They said, you are only of those affected by magic.
وَمَا أَنْتَ إِلَّا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُنَا وَإِنَّ ظُنُّكَ لَمِنَ الْكَاذِبِينَ
You are but a man like ourselves, and indeed, we think you are among the liars.
وَاتَّقُوا الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ وَالْجِبِلَّةَ الْأَوَّلِينَ Fear him who created you and the former generations. قَالُوا إِنَّمَا أَنْتَ مِنَ الْمُسَحَّرِينَ They said, Verily you are only of those bewitched. وَمَا أَنْتَ إِلَّا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُنَا وَإِنَّ ظُنُّكَ لَمِنَ الْكَاذِبِينَ You are not but a mortal like us, and we think that you are of the liars. In this regard, in the previous episodes, we said that from the 176th verse of this chapter, the story of invitation of Prophet Shu'aib has started, when he said to his people that I am a trustworthy messenger, you have to be in awe of Allah, you have to obey me, and I am not asking you any recompense for it. Now, the main point that made him to criticize his people was that they were cheaters. They were the ones who did not fill up the measure. He said, أَوْفُ الْكَيْلِ وَلَا تَكُونُوا مِنَ الْمُخْسِرِينَ He said, you have to fill up the measure. Do not be of the cheaters. زِنُوا بِالْقِسْطَاسِ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ And weigh things with the right balance. وَلَا تَبْخَسُوا النَّاسَ أَشْيَاءَهُمْ Do not defraud people. You are a group that defraud people. You are a people that act corruptly in the earth, making mischief. Stop doing that. And at the end of his commandments, he said, وَاتَّقُوا الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ وَالْجِبِلَّةَ الْأَوَّلِينَ And fear him who created you and the former generations.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن فيه
أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, in the last commandment, Prophet Shu'aib invites his people again to piety. وَاتَّقُوا الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ وَالْجِبِلَّةَ الْأَوَّلِينَ. Now, about the word jibillah, we have discussed so far. But the word jibillah may also refer us to the fact about abundance of transgression and giving people's rights to them and observing justice. And this has been inside the innate of man from the beginning and has come to revive their pure nature. So the word jibillah can be referring to something natural, to something inherent. But unfortunately, the words of this sympathetic prophet did not affect in the people in a positive way, as they answered his logical statement with the same bitter and ugly label that the sinners and tyrants had ever used. The Holy Quran said, قَالُوا إِنَّمَا أَنْتَ مِنَ الْمُسَحَّرِينَ. They said, verily you are only of those bewitched. So, what did their prophet do in the first place? He tried to invite them again to piety, but piety of the one who has created them. Why? Because the one who is the creator deserves to be respected. وَاتَّقُوا الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ. And then, the second point why he started again inviting them to piety is that piety is an inherent impediment against the economic corruptions. Because the very one who has created you, if you were to notice, is the very one who will give you sustenance, is the very one who will provide you. So if you were to understand that, وَاتَّقُوا الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ, if you were to understand that he is the only one who has created you and he is at the same time who is giving you sustenance and provides you, you would stop doing that. لَا تَبْخَسُ النَّاسَ أَشْيَاءَهُمْ. You are a group of cheaters. You are a group that defraud people because you do not pay attention to this aspect of the Creator. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, Take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Iran's Shahid Rudaki warship, an unlikely but definitely meaningful location to hold the closing ceremony of the 17th International Resistance Film Festival.
Now, in these days, you know that the films are more important even than the books. So it's very important for us to make people to know about our beliefs, also our artists and our filmmakers.
It helps us to give information through movies to our children about Islam, about Palestine, people, how they suffer. Someone just see a movie and starts crying after seeing what happens in Palestine, in Yemen, in Syria, through movies.
In these films, or what we're doing about drama and films, we want to give message. And our message to the Israel, that if you kill our people, we will speak about this.
In my opinion, resistance movies are mostly about war because they show that we have to fight to survive. We have to fight for our rights. And this is the most important message of resistance movies.
Making resistance movies is not just about sending a message, which of course is an important part of the whole issue, but everything about this genre is also a challenge. Consider the special effects, the computer graphics, the stunts, the cinematography in general. This genre turns a filmmaker into an expert.
2 kilometers away off the coast, the offshore closing ceremony on the blue waters of the Persian Gulf awarded the best resistance movies in several sections, including documentaries, animations, and short and feature-length movies. As expected, The Stranger, a movie directed by Mohammad Hossein Latifi that depicts the life of the IRGC commander Mohammad Burujerdi, swept most of the awards, while The Situation of Mahdi and The Mudroom came in next. But the success of an up-and-coming young female director definitely stole the show. Leyli Aj impressed the jury with her first movie, Colonel Soraya, a must-see, according to movie critics, that depicts the notorious terrorist group MKO.
The festival has been doing very well. So as a filmmaker, I feel proud that veteran filmmakers in the jury have found my film worthy of the Best Picture Award. Now this makes my job more difficult because expectations are high.
The main reason to produce films is to bring impact to people's lives, to bring change in people's lives. As a religious student, one of the best ways to preach is to produce films.
According to Major General Hossein Salami, the chief commander of the IRGC and the keynote speaker of the closing ceremony, the Resistance Film Festival has been able to do a great job in building cultural and artistic bridges between resistance filmmakers and therefore has become a powerful tool of cultural diplomacy with a promising future.
The 17th International Resistance Film Festival has come to an end in the most memorable way, with its participants hoping that they can use cinema to inspire people across the world and promote resistance against oppression. Gisumish Ahmadi, Asaluye.
Activists gathered in Seoul to protest Japan's plan to begin releasing the radioactive contaminated water accumulating as a result of the Fukushima nuclear disaster. The demonstration comes as the region marks the 12th anniversary of the Fukushima nuclear disaster, with several nations, including China, protesting Tokyo's plan.
Japan's neighbors, including China, South Korea, North Korea, and Russia, as well as Pacific Island countries, have repeatedly expressed concerns and firm opposition to Japan's plan to discharge the nuclear-contaminated wastewater into the sea.
On March 11, 2011, a tsunami flooded the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, causing the meltdowns of three reactors. 150,000 people were evacuated. The disaster caused nuclear-reliant countries to rethink energy policies. Under previous President Moon Jae-in, South Korea had been moving to phase out nuclear energy. Now, under President Yoon Suk-yeol, the country has reversed course with plans to increase nuclear energy production to more than 30% of the total by 2030. South Koreans demonstrating in Seoul oppose the country's return to nuclear energy reliance. South Korea is not only renewing old reactors, but restarting construction on new reactors and building nuclear power plants for other countries.
Energy policies centered on nuclear power are being misrepresented as a solution to the safety of the people and the climate crisis. The lifespan of old nuclear power plants across the country, including Busan Gori No. 1, is being extended without regard for safety, and the region is in danger of becoming a nuclear waste site.
South Korea is developing a nuclear waste problem with existing spent fuel storage set to reach full capacity within 10 years. Frank Smith, Seoul.
After a year spent in Ukraine covering the ongoing conflict with Russia, Italian freelance journalists Andrea Ceresini and Alfredo Bosco returned to Italy a couple of weeks ago on advice of Italy's foreign ministry. The two had their press accreditation suspended by the Ukrainian authorities while they were returning from the Bakhmut front in early February. For weeks, they were unable to work, awaiting interrogation by the Ukrainian security service. Both journalists claim the Kiev's decision was unfounded.
Ukrainian authorities have never explained to us why our press accreditation was suspended. What we know is that both of us carried out independent reports in Ukraine and in the republics of Donetsk and Luhansk between 2014 and 2015. At least two other Italian journalists have received the same treatment. On our fixes chats, there were talks that we had been collaborating with the Russians, that we were spies. It would have been really dangerous to stay in Ukraine for us.
Some Italian media have reported that at least eight Italian journalists have been blacklisted by the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense over the past weeks. According to the two journalists, Ceresini and Bosco, all of them had reported from the Donbas region in previous years.
We thought a solution could have been found during Italy's Prime Minister Meloni visit to Kiev last month. We were ready to discuss our situation with the Ukrainian authorities. It goes without saying that we are disappointed.
Andrea Ceresini is an expert on far-right terrorism in Italy's 70s. He has been freelancing for a number of authoritative Italian broadcasters and newspapers from many areas of crisis, including Egypt and Venezuela. Alfredo Bosco established himself for his photo reportage on Mexico's drug cartels and 2010's Haiti's cholera outbreak. Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has yet to comment on the suspension of the two journalists' press accreditation by the Ukrainian authorities, nor has she ever expressed support for them. Rome has been a staunch supporter of Kyiv since the beginning of the war in Ukraine over a year ago. Max Civili, Rome.
Introducing a new role model by outlining the most important characteristics. The third model for women may be the answer to women's woes, and what better occasion to discuss this global issue than International Women's Day? The concept of the third model for women was presented initially on March 6, 2012, by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And now academics and researchers participating in an international congress held in Tehran have taken the opportunity to shed more light on this new concept.
In order to present this new role model and to explain its different dimensions, we must allow a scientific discourse to take place. Therefore, we must first theorize the two models that exist, namely the Western narrative of women and the Eastern viewpoint. Then we can create a platform for promoting the third model, which is the Muslim women.
The leader of the Islamic Revolution presented this concept about 10 years ago, and by holding this conference, we want to promote third model for women to the elite in order to design a comprehensive plan of action. We should start with articles, books and meetings, and then we can move forward.
According to the foreign participants of the conference, the issue of the status of women in today's world is a complicated one, and practical examples are necessary to understand the concept. One faculty member in particular raised an interesting point.
In Iran, women clearly play an important role in the society, and women are active in all different aspects of social life. Many of them are known worldwide. So I think that if we're looking for practical examples of this concept, all we need to do is look at the Iranian society.
In the East, traditionally, women have been sidelined, and in the West, they are mostly exploited for political and economic gains. But Islam presents a different viewpoint.
Iranian women and Iranian Muslim women in particular reflect the teachings of Islam and how Islam defines women. They are active members of the community. This is quite evident in the Iranian society.
Reflecting the true image of Iranian women while highlighting their achievements is a necessary step that needs to be taken.
Ayatollah Khamenei believes that in the Islamic school of thought, women play an exceptional role in the society, and therefore he presents a new and more realistic model. Very different from the Western capitalist and the Eastern sidelined and passive woman. The third model is the Iranian Muslim woman, an active member of the society who has opened a new chapter in history. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
A high-ranking Iranian delegation headed by Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian arrived in Damascus. The top official met Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, who welcomed Iran's participation in the upcoming quadripartite talks between Syria, Turkey, Iran, and Russia. Assad asserted that Syrians' interests are the basis for any steps or dialogue the government makes. Amir Abdullahian renewed Iran's support to Syria. He said Iran trusts Syria's stances and decisions and will support them during the quadripartite talks. He also welcomed the recent ease of tensions between Syria and Arab countries. The top official also held a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart Faisal al-Maqdad, followed by a joint press conference in which Amir Abdullahian underlined that dialogue is the only way to end the region's dilemmas.
We'll continue to support Syria during its hardships. Bilateral talks and dialogue in the region is the only solution for crisis. We will welcome the upcoming quadripartite meetings in Moscow with the aim of increasing cooperation and ending all crises.
He added that the recent Israeli aggression on Aleppo indicates the regime's barbaric attitude and reflects its concern over internal crises Israel is facing. Amir Abdullahian said it is time that all foreign troops illegally present in Syria to leave, calling on all sides to respect Syria's sovereignty. Miqdad, for his part, said coordination between both countries is at its highest levels, describing Iran's role during Syria's unrest as positive.
The role played by Iran in Astana talks in all stages of Syria's crisis was a positive one. That's why, from the beginning, we welcomed Iran's participation in the quadripartite talks. This role always proved Iran's respect of international legitimacy in efforts to end crisis.
Amir Abdullahian also visited earthquake-affected parts of Syria, as well as temporary shelter centers, expressing Iran's condolences to the Syrian people and promising his country will continue to send humanitarian aid to the needy. Iran's foreign minister is exerting diplomatic efforts to speed up the restoration of relations between Syria and Turkey. The ties between Syria and Iran continue to set an example of steadfast strategic cooperation in the region based on trust and mutual interests. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Tens of Palestinians took to the streets after prayer, expressing their support with the Palestinian prisoners and Israeli jails against the repressive measures and policies initiated by the far-right Israeli Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir. Thousands of Palestinian political prisoners in Israeli prisons continue for the 22nd day of collective disobedience measures in response to the ongoing repression campaign. Islamic Jihad movement has affirmed its support for the Palestinian prisoners' civil disobedience actions in the face of the Israeli fanatic measures, stressing that the prisoners will never be abandoned.
We declare in the Islamic Jihad that we stand with the Palestinian prisoners and support their civil disobedience actions. And even if the measures escalated to an open-ended hunger strike, we will support them and ready for all the possibilities. We will never abandon them.
On top of these measures is the approval of a draft bill that would authorize the execution of the Palestinian detainees that have performed anti-occupation operations. The campaign is expected to culminate on the first day of the upcoming holy fasting month of Ramadan, with a full-scale hunger strike bearing the banner of Freedom or Martyrdom. Palestinian prisoner's father expressed his concerns over the hunger strike step, calling for the international organizations to support the prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners' families live in stress over the lives of their sons and daughters in Israeli jails, as hunger strike is the most difficult thing a prisoner can endure, and it threatens their lives.
Palestinians chanted slogans against the far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir and called for the immediate halt of the repressive measures.
Our prisoners' cause is a just one, and we support them in everything they take against the Israeli measures. We call on the world to support the Palestinian prisoners and put pressure on the Zionist occupation to stop passing the law and stop repressive measures against prisoners and detainees.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip stressed that Israel's hostile policies will never stop them from exercising the right to resist the regime and its settlers. Al Asif, Gaza.
This year's International Women's Day has seen the United Nations raising the alarm about the situation of women in Afghanistan. The UNICEF has announced that the number of malnourished, pregnant and breastfeeding women in the country has increased by 49%. According to the UN agency, nearly 3 million women and young girls in Afghanistan suffer from undernutrition.
The current situation of Afghanistan has affected all sections of Afghan society, especially pregnant and breastfeeding women. You know that pregnant and breastfeeding mothers are the most vulnerable. Most of the mother patients we receive nowadays are severely undernourished, which results from acute poverty. People living in the hospital's neighborhood are going through harsh economic conditions.
As the war-torn country is gripped by multiple crises, Afghan women and children are hit the hardest. Doctors and experts emphasize the need for continued relief fund for Afghans, especially women.
Undoubtedly, Afghanistan today is dependent on aid, and such assistance is of high importance because they can save lives, especially those of malnourished children and pregnant women. It is better not to politicize the treatment and well-being of mothers and children. I hope donors continue to provide aid to the country's health sector and improve people's conditions.
Most households in Afghanistan are relying on their male breadwinners. In many cases, they fail to make ends meet or provide enough food for their families, as the country has been grappling with an economic crisis, mainly caused by the freezing of Afghan assets by Western countries. The U.S. and its allies have frozen Afghan assets and aid after the Taliban took power in 2021, following the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from the country. This year on International Women's Day, Afghan women are in great distress as they experience rapidly deteriorating conditions. Advocates are calling for greater support and attention for the well-being of Afghan women. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Dozens of people, many fleeing war and persecution, risk their lives every day in makeshift boats crossing the English Channel to seek asylum in the UK. But a new government bill here is about to change that.
People must know that if they come here illegally, it will result in their detention and swift removal. Once this happens, and they know it will happen, they will not come and the boats will stop.
The previous government's so-called Rwanda plan that would see migrants deported to Rwanda has not been implemented after legal challenges from rights groups. The government argues the law will stop the business of people smugglers. The UN has called the bill a clear breach of the Refugee Convention, and rights activists say it is unethical and unworkable.
It's absolutely ridiculous. People will continue to exploit vulnerable people who are desperately trying to flee oppressive regimes, you know, flee from countries where they have no hope, no rights, and no future. People smugglers don't care about processes and procedures and what will happen the other end. They care about collecting their money and making sure boats or trains or whatever pushes out with human cargo on it.
2022 saw a record 25,000 people arriving in the UK by boat. 31 died trying, raising questions about the functionality of the UK's asylum system.
Well, it certainly isn't fit for purpose. It is very, very bureaucratic. But it also takes too long to, for instance, give those claiming asylum with the skills and experience that we are very short of here in the United Kingdom.
And then there's Brexit. Before it, the UK shared a returns policy with the EU that allowed it to send migrants back to the countries they had first arrived in. There is no such deal in place now.
The bill is unlikely to face much opposition in the building behind me, where the Conservatives have a majority. But we're yet to see how it'll fare in the courts. Critics are also saying that it's a gimmick by the government to win more votes among its Conservative base at the next general election. Saeed Purza, London.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
The people of philosophy and reason should study the inherent secrets of this book, and through reference to the profound issues, they should reveal the divine philosophy and put it at the disposal of the right people. And the upright people should give us as a gift to those who are thirsty for this pond, Quran, a sip and drink from what the heart of the Holy Prophet received from Allah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. This is Sister Musavi. Well, in this program, what we do is to read some of the valuable speeches of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh and explain about their interpretations. We hope that in that way, we as lovers of this great character would come to a deeper understanding of Imam Khomeini's thoughts and ideologies. Well, in regard to the subject of the religion of Islam, Imam Khomeini holds that it is this power of Islam that has gathered together the various ethnic groups under one roof. The sentence of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, is about racism, which is a controversial